This coming weekend is Free Fishing Weekend in Iowa, the unofficial kickoff to the summer fishing season in the state. Of course, for some Iowans who love to fish, the season never ends. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're going fishing, and we'll start at the very beginning. For the last few weeks, the DNR fisheries supervisors have been working crazy hours and pulling all-nighters as they stock Iowa's lakes and rivers. I'll talk with Jay Rudisill, fish culture supervisor for Lake Rathbun, Spirit Lake, and Fairport Hatchery. I'll talk with Chad Dolan, DNR fisheries management biologist, and Kat Lodge, director of the Hawkeye Fly Fishing Association. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. For the last couple of weeks, the DNR fisheries supervisors have been working crazy hours and pulling all-nighters as they stock Iowa's lakes and rivers with fish. This hour, we'll find out all about that process and talk fishing in Iowa. We also want to hear from you. Our experts, of course, are here to field your questions this hour. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Chad Dolan. He is DNR fisheries management biologist based at Lake Darling State Park. Hello, Chad.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Glad to be here.
And also with us is Jay Rudisill. He is with the Iowa DNR as well. He is warm and cool water fish culture supervisor for Lake Rathbun, Spirit Lake, and Fairport, which is a hatchery on the Mississippi River. Hello, Jay.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
And I know you're one of these guys who's been staying up all night to help stock lakes and streams in Iowa, but I want to go back to the beginning of that process, because before you can stock all of those lakes and streams, you, of course, need a lot of fish eggs, and that's a process that starts in April. Where do all those eggs come from?
Well, the eggs, the walleye eggs, is what we work on in late March and early April, and we have different lakes with walleye broodstock around the state. Rathbun Lake being one, Clear Lake, Storm Lake, and then the Iowa Great Lakes, consisting of Spirit Lake, East and West Okoboji Lakes. Those are our broodstock lakes where we collect our broodstock, and we spawn those females to create small newly hatched walleyes that we call fry.
All right. So when you are catching the females, so you can spawn them and collect all these eggs, how do you do that?
Oh, we collect the adult fish using gill nets, and we'll set those gill nets on ripped, wrapped areas of lakes, because that's where walleyes like to spawn. And so the fish will get entangled in the net, and then we will collect the net and transfer back to the hatchery where we do the spawning process.
And what is the spawning process?
Okay, well, first we have to sort the fish. At Rathbun Lake, our procedure is to sort the fish by sex. So we sort the males from the females. And then the females get further sorted as to whether they are ready to spawn, which we call those ripe fish, and if they are not ready to spawn, and we call those green fish. So once all the sorting, the fish sorting has taken place, then we start spawning the females that are ripe by manually putting pressure on the abdomen, and we will manually into a pan, and then we will fertilize the eggs with walleye semen. And after the fertilization takes place, we use a clay solution on the eggs to reduce the adhesiveness.
Okay, and pardon my asking, I understand you're basically squeezing the eggs out of the females. How do you collect the walleye semen?
We squeeze it out of them, too.
All right.
But we do that during the day. We squeeze the semen out of the males, and we have an extender solution that we mix with the semen, and then we can just store that in the refrigerator, and we can use that for up to 7 to 10 days.
All right. And you said you do that during the day with the females and the spawning. Do you do that at night?
Yes, we do that at night. We'll set our nets about, the nets are usually set by 5 p.m. in the evening, and then there's a little bit of a break, and then our crews will go back out on the lakes at 9 o'clock, and they will retrieve the nets onto their boats, and they will get the fish out of the nets, and then they'll reset the nets. And so after all the nets are, the fish are collected from the nets, they'll go back to the hatchery and do the spawning process that I spoke of earlier. And then we'll go back again at midnight, and then and we'll retrieve the fish out of the nets, and we'll bring the fish, we'll bring the nets back to the hatchery as well for the evening. And so our crews, their nights don't end. It depends on how many fish there are to spawn, but they usually don't end until 2 or 2:30 in the morning.
Wow. I don't know quite how you quantify this, but how much production do you get from a female? How many eggs?
Okay, well, no, it's easy to quantify. We take egg samples and we put them in a special trough, and we'll count how many eggs are in 3 inches of length, and then we have a conversion chart that we use. And the fish from Rathbun this year, once we did the quantification, we determined that there was about 132,000 eggs in a quart.
Wow.
And then we measure how many quarts come out of each female, and at Rathbun this year we averaged right at 1.3 quarts per female.
Oh my goodness, that's a lot of eggs.
Yes.
So you used the term earlier, broodstock. These lakes where you get these fish from, obviously these are the fish that you want to reproduce and hatch out these eggs in the hatcheries. But what makes these lakes the places where you gather these fish?
Those lakes traditionally have strong walleye populations. The effort that goes into collecting the walleye broodstock and the production of walleye fry, it's a pretty massive effort. We have between 90 and 100 full-time employees in our fisheries bureau, and the vast majority are taking part in our walleye broodstock collection and fry production.
Wow.
You know, at Rathbun, we will net, in order to get the number of eggs that we need to produce the fish that we need to produce, you know, we'll net anywhere from 8 to 12 to maybe even 14 nights. So we want to go to lakes with the strongest walleye populations to kind of to reduce the effort that goes into the overall operation.
All right. Now, once you have these eggs and you have the walleye semen and you mix these all together, how do you hatch these eggs?
Okay. Well, they go in special jars called McDonald jars, and we usually put 3 quarts in a jar. And so the water enters the McDonald jar has a rounded bottom. And the water will be entered into the center of the jar all the way at the bottom, and it upwells in that rounded bottom of the jar, and it keeps those eggs just gently rolling and gently moving.
Okay.
And then once the eggs hatch, which everything with fish, because they're cold-blooded animals, depends on water temperature. But at typical water temperatures, the eggs will hatch in 14 to 21 days. And so once the newly hatched walleye emerge from the egg, they swim up and they swim out of the jar, and then they go to one of several catch tanks that we have with a very fine screen on them, so that they don't go out, they don't leave the tank.
All right, and you used the term fry earlier. That's a term for baby fish, right?
Yes, that's a newly hatched fish is called fry.
All right. And how long do they stay in the hatcheries once they hatch?
Well, most of our walleye fry, they get stocked immediately within 4 days of hatching.
Wow.
And like just to get put a number on it, between our Rathbun Lake hatchery and our Spirit Lake hatchery, we hatched 152 million walleye fry.
152 million.
Correct.
All right. And then how do you decide where they go?
Well, that's where our management biologists like Chad come into play. In the wintertime, we have management biologists that are responsible for different regions of the state. Most of the time, they're responsible for 8 to 10 public bodies of water in 8 to 10 counties. And so in the wintertime, they develop these lists of these are the fish, these are the species of fish and the size of fish that we need to stock our public bodies of water to keep, you know, keep quality fishing going. And so once that list is compiled, then that's the charge for the hatchery system, is to try to produce those fish that the management biologists have requested.
All right. So once you have all the orders in, how do you transport the fry and how do you release them?
Okay, well, we have two different methods for walleye fry, and we pretty much leave it to the discretion of the management biologist. But some management biologists, they just want the fry stocked at the boat ramps, at the lakes. And so we will transport those fish. We have special fish hauling trucks equipped with tanks. And so we'll put put water, of course, and the walleye fry in the tanks at reasonable densities. And we'll just haul those fish to those locations, and we would hook up a discharge tube onto the tank, and then we will open a valve, and that whole tank or tanks will empty into that lake at the boat ramp. However, some biologists, they think it's better to stock those fish out in the middle of the lake. So in those cases, we will quantify the walleye fry, and we will put them in plastic bags, and the plastic bag will have about one-third with fish and water, and two-thirds will be pure oxygen, just 100% oxygen, and then we seal the bags up so the oxygen can't escape. And so we'll transport those fish in bags, and once we get to the lake where they're going to be stocked, the biologist will meet us there with a boat or boats, and then we will transfer those bags to the boats, and then they will boat out to the specific locations in the middle of the lake that they would like to stock the fish.
And what time of day does this happen?
Now, the stocking usually always happens in the daytime.
Okay.
Nighttime work is the spawning.
So that's early in the season when it's nice and cold out and...
Oh, yes. Yeah, right. I think when someone finds out that I work for the DNR, I work with fish, they think I'm out on the lake every day, and they think it's sunny and 70 and a gentle breeze.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We're going to be right back. Jay, can you stay with us through the break?
I sure can.
All right, great. Jay Rudisill is with the Iowa DNR. He is a warm and cool water fish culture supervisor for Lake Rathbun, Spirit Lake, and also Chad is here, DNR Fisheries Management Biologist based at Lake Darling. We'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Your sweet wife will catch more fish than you. Many fish bites if you got good bait. Here's a little tip that I would like to relate. Many fish bites if you got good bait. I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing, and my baby going fishing too.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about fishing in Iowa. And so far, we've been talking about the very beginning of the process, helping the fish spawn, collecting eggs, hatching those eggs, and now releasing the fry, that's the baby fish, back into Iowa's lakes and rivers. We're talking about stocking, and of course, we'll be answering your questions as well. If you have questions for our experts, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jay Rudisill is here, and also Chad Dolan, both with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. And a big question that I know a lot of people have, Jay, after we've just been talking about this whole process, why do this? Why not just let nature take its course?
Oh, because natural reproduction in walleye occurs in the lakes, but very few, if any, of those eggs hatch, and even fewer of those ones that do actually survive to a larger size.
All right. And Chad, once all these fry get released into the lakes and rivers, what's the survival rate for these little fish?
Oh, it'd be very, very small. The majority are going to succumb to predation by larger fish. And it's our hope that that small percentage that does make it eventually grows to a larger size that people can catch.
All right. And we've been talking about walleye so far, but how many different varieties of fish do you go through this process with?
Well, walleye is a special one. Like walleye, muskies is another fish that they go through a similar process, northern pike. There are largemouth bass. We don't go out and collect broodstock, but some broodstock are collected to introduce into hatchery ponds to kind of let them naturally do their thing in terms of spawning and producing young fish. And then the aquaculturists then obviously will harvest those fish and load them up on trucks and deliver them throughout the state to the various management districts and biologists for stocking at that point in time.
And Jay, earlier you mentioned 90 to 100 individuals working these very cold nights in March and April to collect fish in Iowa's lakes. What's it like out there?
Well, it can the conditions can really vary. It just depends on what the weather is like. But there's a lot of times it's very cold. Obviously, doing this at night, it's very dark, so your visibility is limited. It can be windy. I remember being out there sometimes where it's expected to get below freezing, and so we're putting obviously on a boat around and a lot of water that gets on the boat. So we actually have had to put salt down on the decks of our boat to keep water from freezing up. The conditions can be dangerous if it's windy. Boats can take on more water than what you would like. But we have a dedicated group of professionals, and safety is our top priority.
So what's the and Chad, I know you're one of those people out there on on the boats freezing as well. What's the weirdest thing that's ever happened on one of these trips to you, Jay or Chad, whichever one wants to jump in here?
Chad, you can go ahead.
Sure. Well, and I know what Jay's thinking, but recently we were out doing our walleye broodstock collection, and we got out. We knew it was rough. Everybody's bundled up trying to stay warm. It's windy. You're getting a little bit of rain. You've got big waves that are building. And it's only about 2.5 feet when you go out. And don't get me wrong, that's pretty bumpy. I mean, we're getting tossed around. My particular unit has a little bit smaller boat, so it's always a challenge anyway. And we're out there pulling our nets in, and we pull three in. And, boy, it was just an awesome haul. I mean, of all the boats that reported their catches that night, I think we had well more fish. I mean, we had our tank full. We get to our fourth net, we get it pulled in, we're up on shore, we're backing out to reset the net. The waves at this point have now built to 5 feet, and so they're crashing over the back of the boat. We're getting sprayed. We run into a rock, it stops our prop for just a second. Next thing we know, our boat turns sideways, and we're taking on water faster than you can imagine. Uh-huh. Good thing is, we're on shore, we're pushed up against the dam, we're not in any danger of sinking, we can't move our boat any longer, and of course, you continue to get hammered by waves and sprayed, and in situations Jay mentioned, you've just got to be safe, you've got to use your head. The most important thing at that point is human life and equipment, and making sure all those are okay. Yeah, we've got a big load of fish, but sometimes you have to make the decision, what are you going to do with those? You can't move the boat. You're in a kind of a precarious situation, and the best thing to do at that point is let those fish go, save those human beings, and save that equipment, and come back and do it another day.
Because a painful decision to make, though.
It was a painful decision. I look back and say, darn, we could have been out a day sooner and been back home and not collecting these fish anymore. It's a lot of fun, but we are there an extended period of time, and we are battling the environment, and you've got all those things to deal with and consider. But
and why do you do it at night?
Well, the walleyes come in close to shore at night. They're coming up on the rocks, particularly the dam where you've got large cobble and boulders that are overlapping and create interstitial spaces, and those fish will actually spawn over that rock, and the eggs fall into those spaces. And kind of the biological perspective is they're trying to protect those eggs from predators. And if they fall into those interstitial spaces, then a predator can't get to them easily. So problem in a lake environment, you know, I mean, a walleye is really a fish that came about in a riverine system. So in a lake system, you're not getting current in the same sense as in a river system where you've got constant flow. And that constant flow keeps those eggs free of silt. And obviously, if you've got silt that's falling on top of those, it can smother the eggs and reduce survival. And so that's why we're out there, and we have to help. We have to give them the little bit of help that they need in order to succeed. And we do that by bringing those fish into the hatchery and spawning them there.
All right. So you can catch a whole lot more fish at night.
Sure.
Because they're close to the
shore.
There.
You
know where they are.
That's the simple answer.
And
they're there.
And these ladyfish you're bringing in, how big are they?
Some of those ladyfish are up to about 30 inches in size.
So wow.
They're very good. And you're talking, you know, 8.5, maybe even 10 pounds in some cases for those large fish.
All right. And Jay, was that the same story you were thinking of?
Yeah, that was the one I was thinking of. But I knew Chad could tell it a lot better than I could.
Sure. Yep, I was there.
Well, and Jay, before I let you go, so these little tiny fry that you're releasing into Iowa's lakes right now, how far along are you with stocking?
Well, the fry stocking is actually over.
Okay.
We stocked the fry about the last week of April in the very first day. And actually, those fry that were hatched in April, we keep some of them on the hatchery grounds because we have some ponds that we raise them up to a larger size. And so those fry that hatched in April are now 2 inches long. And actually, we are harvesting ponds this week, and we're stocking out 2-inch walleyes right now.
Okay. And how long does it take for a 2-inch walleye to become a fish that somebody could catch?
Well, it depends on the system that they're in. And most of our 2-inch fish will be going in, most of them, not all of them, most of them will be going into river systems like Chad was speaking of. Now, we do keep some of the 2-inch fish even longer at the hatchery, and we raise them up to an 8 to 10-inch size, and they will be 8 to 10 inches in October.
Okay. And then you release them in the fall?
Yes, and then we release them in the fall. And so a fry that was stocked in the lake will be anywhere from 6 to 8 inches in the fall. But the fry that the very same fry, if we keep those in the hatchery, they'll be 8 to 10 inches.
Oh, okay.
And then by the second year, after they're stocked in Rathbun Lake or other lakes, they might be 13 to 14 inches after the second growing season. And that would be a marginal fish for a person to keep.
All right. Well, Jay, thank you so much for being with us today and telling us about this process.
I had
no idea so much was going on in Iowa's lakes from March through June.
Yeah, that's definitely a busy time of year for us. Thanks for inviting me on the show. I was very happy to do it.
Right. Jay Rudisill is with the Iowa DNR. He is warm and cool water fish culture supervisor for Lake Rathbun, Spirit Lake, and Fairport, which is a hatchery on the Mississippi River. Chad Dolan is staying with us. He is DNR fisheries management biologist based at Lake Darling State Park. And so we've been talking about the spawning and the hatching and the stocking. And I think a lot of people, myself included, believed that fishing limits were in place to help a lake support its population and continue to have the fish reproduce and continue to be there for many years. Now, how do limits work with this whole process?
Well, they can work in a variety of ways. I mean, the most simple, you know, we have a minimum length limit on black bass. And that limit is basically in place to allow those fish to reach a size where they're mature and they can spawn. Because if we're harvesting them before they have a chance to spawn and replenish the population, obviously that could have an impact. So that is one of the most clearest ways. Now, other ways that, you know, these length limits or, you know, bag limits come about is, you know, depends on what species. Again, you know, the largemouth bass. Why do we allow people only to keep very few, you know, such as three on our inland lakes and ponds? And that's essentially because they're a top-level predator. Their biomass out there just isn't the same as prey, you know, like a bluegill. They're very, very abundant. Essentially, if people are taking those fish out of the system, you lose the control in terms of predation on those prey populations, and they can become overabundant. And if they become overabundant, that has repercussions on the entire fish community in the sense that, you know, there's only so much food that can be shared amongst all those different fish species within the community. And essentially, if you've got not enough food, then fish can't grow very well. So you can simply see, you know, by people not adhering to a length limit or a bag limit on something like bass, what kind of repercussions it could have on that fish community that would be negative.
All right. So are there fish populations that people fish for in Iowa that are self-supporting, that don't need management?
Well, you know, we do have, you know, I'm going to put a little caveat on that. Bluegill and crappies would be a good example where they, you know, limits aren't necessarily needed. We have a limit in place. You know, we allow people to take 25 of those per day. You know, biologically speaking, those particular fish species would support themselves just fine without a limit. You know, it becomes a question of, you know, some people feel it's more societal. Do some people feel like one person taking 100 in any given day is too many? But the bottom line is, biologically, you know, a bluegill can produce up to 50,000 eggs per female. And you can just imagine there are many, many females throughout that entire population in a given lake. And therefore, you know, again, only a small percentage of what's produced survives. But at the same time, there's so many to start with that you could, you know, you're essentially ending up with a very abundant prey population in the end. We don't have to come back and maintenance stock, and that's kind of what Jay was alluding to with the walleyes. We go out there and we collect walleyes every year because we have to maintain walleye populations throughout the state. If we don't bring fish back and replenish those populations, they won't survive over time because they're not having adequate success reproducing naturally in their environment.
All right. Are there we've talked about a few different species that are intensively managed.
Mm-hmm.
Are these native fish species to Iowa? Are there non-native fish species that you're stocking and managing in Iowa's lakes?
Well, we have some non-natives. Those would be some trout species. We call those naturalized. They were brought here many, many years ago. Typically, when you bring in a non-native species, you're asking for trouble. But in the case of those particular fish species, it worked just fine. And those were stocked into a lot of our cold water streams in northeast Iowa, and they took very, very well and have done excellent throughout time. And they've been here so long now, we consider them naturalized, not so much non-native in the strictest sense anymore.
All right, which is a perfect time to bring someone new into this conversation.
Sure.
Kate Lodge is on the line with us. She's director of the Hawkeye Fly Fishing Association. And, of course, many people know that in northeastern Iowa, it has become a destination for anglers who are looking for trout with the hundreds of miles of beautiful cold water trout streams up there. Hello, Kate.
Well, hello. Good morning.
Thank you.
Chad.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here, Kate. And let me know, how did you get started fly fishing?
Well, actually, I'm a seasonal resident of Canada, and a college friend saw some old rods and reels lying around the island and had no clue. I had no clue what they were. He informed me that they were fly rods, which would have been used before the days of spin cast and bait cast rods. So I became curious, and as soon as a class came up in the Quad City area, I saw a fly fishing class. And I'm like, oh, I've got fly fishing rods. I need to learn how to do that. So I became involved in 2007, and it's been kind of, you get kind of busier and busier in a lot of different aspects every year. There's great things to do.
Were you surprised to learn that, northeastern Iowa is such a wonderful place to go fly fishing and,
well,
and
yes,
fish
I've
for trout?
I've been heading to Canada for years, and if I had known those wonderful spring creeks were in northeast Iowa, I would have been in northeast Iowa long before I ever discovered it.
So it was a well-kept secret from you.
It is.
And, Chad, tell me a little bit about the trout. You mentioned naturalized trout that live in northeastern Iowa. What makes northeastern Iowa such a good place for trout?
Well, it's really kind of indicative of the streams that are present there and their temperatures that they hold throughout the year. Trout generally don't survive in temperatures above 65 degrees very long or very well at all. Most of the state doesn't have streams that meet those temperature requirements, and northeast Iowa does. And so, obviously, it's an area that we can target. Now, you know, along with that, northeast Iowa has some native trout species, brook trout, that occurred there for a long, long, long time. And we knew that, you know, the conditions were amenable to other trout species.
Well, we're going to take a short break here. We'll be back in just a moment. And Kate, please stay with us. Kate Lodge is director of the Hawkeye Fly Fishing Association. Also with us this hour is Chad Dolan, DNR fisheries management biologist based at Lake Darling State Park. And you're welcome to join the conversation as well at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
Can't get the fish in the line and in the water. On got a pole and a big old net. Never seen you get him wet. Can't get your fish in the line and in the water.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about fishing in Iowa. And with me is Chad Dolan. He is DNR Fisheries Management Biologist based at Lake Darling State Park. Also with us is Kate Lodge. She is Director of the Hawkeye Fly Fishing Association. And we'd love to hear from you as well. If you have questions this hour, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Kate, I know that you love to fly fish, but you have some particular ideas about what time of year is preferable to fish. When do you fish?
Well, I really prefer September through the first weekend of May. You're not fighting 93-degree heat and 100% humidity, tall weeds. You know, children enjoy the streams, and they should. They need to be out there and enjoying them, kids with floaties in your pools. But so I really don't mind a little bit of rain, a little bit of snow, as long as the pools aren't iced over with several below 0 days like we had this previous winter. To me, winter is absolutely the most beautiful time to be on the spring creeks.
Wow. And you fish for trout. What other fish do you cast for?
Oh, gosh. Northern pike would be my fish of choice. King salmon, muskie, bass. Of course, crappie and bluegill on a fly rod are a lot of fun. You get a lightweight fly rod, and a crappie can just feel like a whale.
And you've also been connecting with other women who love to fish. Tell me about that.
Well, we do have our annual fly fishing weekend, and that this year was in May. We've gotten up to 6 ladies now and several others who are interested, but you always have things like graduation parties and things that get in the way. We do meet on Friday through Sunday, and anyone is always welcome. We do kind of put the word out and just show up, camp with us. 1 year we rented a house that was really nice. We've enjoyed being in northeast Iowa, and we're really looking forward to it again next year.
So why make an effort to get other women involved in fishing?
I think that outdoors in general is it's really important to get women and children involved. It's a really a relaxing way to lower your blood pressure. It's just beautiful. Women, I think, tend to be concerned about conservation issues, too. And one of the things that we always look forward to is, you know, you always want to leave the water better than you found it. I think that's important for, you know, if you want to, you know, you've got to have good quality water. If the fish are healthy, then it's going to be good for people, too.
And do you keep the fish that you catch?
Sometimes. The hatcheries go through a great deal of trouble to raise fish for us to catch and eat. Trout's very nutritious, has a lot of good vitamin B12 and protein. But yet I also really enjoy a lot of the streams where they put in wild trout or there's naturally reproducing trout and they're protected. You can tell when you catch a wild natural trout that, you know, the colors are just striking and it's quite a thrill. And you always enjoy putting that fish back to go back to the stream and to grow up and maybe catch it again someday.
Well, Kate, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Kate Lodge is director of Hawkeye Fly Fishing Association. And Chad Dolan is still with us. And Chad, when people catch and release, do those fish make it? Are they all right?
Yeah, generally they're just fine. You know, the hooking process and then the fighting of the fish and bringing the fish in. The longer you hold it out of the water, obviously, and parade it around and show everybody, that can be an issue the longer you do that. But generally, people are catching that fish, snapping a quick picture, and putting that fish back in the water. Some people will hold on to the fish's tail and kind of pull the gills through the water and let that fish breathe a little bit and let it go. And in most cases, that fish will be just fine.
What do you like to fish for?
I like to fish for bluegills and crappies. Those are two of my favorite. I target the crappies around May 15th in the spring. Go out and throw a small jig, maybe a 30-second ounce with a paddle tail body on it up close to shore. Hopefully they're on shore. That time of year, they're kind of in the mist or at least preparing to spawn, if not spawning, and they'll move up tight to shore, and they can be very susceptible to anglers at that point. As the season moves on, the crappies move a little deeper and can be a little bit harder to catch, but thankfully about that time, the bluegills come up close to shore. And you can kind of switch your effort and focus on bluegills with many of the same tackle choices. Fly fishing is excellent. In fact, I just did a little bit of that on Friday with a friend of mine down at Lake Geode State Park. And the bluegills are up on the beds and biting just fine.
Do you avoid fishing for the fish that you work so hard to spawn and stalk in Iowa's lakes?
You know, not so much. I like to fish for just about everything, so given the opportunity, you know, I'll do it. You know, largemouth bass fishing is something that I enjoy. I don't tend to keep a lot of largemouth bass. That's just a personal choice. You know, and I understand the biology of why they're there, and that's not the main reason I don't keep them. I just would rather catch and eat a bluegill or eat a crappie. That's just my thing. So.
All right. And we have this question from Brian in Cedar Rapids, who couldn't stay on the line, but he says, as far as crappie and bluegill go, is it better to keep smaller ones to let the bigger ones go?
Oh, not necessarily, because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, these fish are so fecund, which just means they produce a whole bunch of eggs. You know, obviously, the bigger fish, you're going to produce, you know, probably more eggs than those smaller fish. But when you're talking about something like bluegill and crappie that produce, you know, an abundant egg amount like that, you're going to have plenty of fish that are produced and eventually, you know, a portion of those survive and make it into that adult population and sustain that population over time. Now, if you're in a situation, you know, where you're catching just continually small fish, and you're thinking that you're going to remove some of those small fish so that the rest can grow up bigger, that might be kind of a fruitless effort because of that high level of reproduction. You can't keep up with that level of reproduction. And there's probably another problem that's occurring, and that may be your predator population has been damaged to some extent. And the answer might be that we need more largemouth bass in that community in order to trim down those prey populations and allow those smaller fish to grow bigger.
All right, let's go to the phones. David is on the line in Waterloo. Hi, David.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, why do walleye reproduce in Canada and Minnesota, yet they don't reproduce in Iowa naturally?
Well, the key is that they're a riverine species. And when I say riverine, not just in the river proper, but a lot of what Canada has is large flowages that are all interconnected, and you've got a little bit of water moving from one area to the other. And, you know, you've got excellent water quality. We've got excellent water quality in a lot of places in Iowa, but you just generally think, you know, where do we see walleye in Iowa? Where are some of our best places? Well, it's in these large river impoundments. They were riverine systems. They still have a high degree of discharge and changeover in the water. You had historically flow. Now, we've modified that to create these big lakes, and it's not flowing. Those systems aren't flowing like they once were. And when you look at a lake impoundment where you basically have no flow, you've got a closed system with impounded water that's not moving at all, those can be issues. And as I talked about earlier, when these walleye spawn in those particular systems, their eggs, because these systems lack flow, aren't kept free of sediment, and that sediment collects on top of those eggs and can actually smother them. Now, if that doesn't happen, we've got a high biomass of predators out there other than walleyes that will key in on that egg production and feed on it. And so a lot of the eggs are consumed, and if the eggs actually hatch, then the young are susceptible to predation. So just overall, there just isn't a whole lot of survival in those walleye populations in that natural environment, and they need our help in order to succeed.
All right, David, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, John is on the line in Marion. Hi, John.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, it actually kind of piggybacks on the last question, but because before settlement, there was lots of natural reproduction in interior rivers, and now we really don't have any, not just for walleye. So what would it take, just at least hypothetically, to get back some more of our natural reproduction so we didn't have to rely so heavily on the hatchery system?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is really, you know, what is happening in our watersheds? And you know, and we're talking about land use, and we've got things out there like agriculture, but we've also got urban development. And just, you know, think about what people do every day. But essentially, you know, fish need excellent water quality in order to do well. A lot of these fish rely on sight in order to feed. And if they can't feed and they can't grow, then they can't reproduce at some point. So,
if I can interject,
sure.
What is the effect of dams on so many of our interior rivers then? Or what would happen if we had fewer dams on our interior rivers?
Well, obviously, if we had fewer dams, we could go back to more of a natural state or natural sort of system. But, you know, in the same sense, now with the threat of aquatic invasive species, sometimes dams can act as a barrier to prevent the spread of those particular animals, which in turn could further damage, you know, our native systems. So you've kind of got to kind of weigh the good versus the bad and what's going to happen if you do this versus that. So there are lots of things to consider. Obviously, if we could restore a riverine system back to the way it was, that would be great if we could do that. But we can't always do that in every case.
All right. John, does that answer your question?
Close enough.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, John. And David in Iowa City has what must be one of your very favorite questions for you. Hi, David.
Sure. I'm glad to hear that put that way, because I feel kind of silly asking it.
Oh, I don't think you should. What is your question?
I'm 60 years old. I have attempted to fish from time to time. Nobody ever really taught me to fish in my youth. And as I hear you folks talking, I realize that all this stuff about the fish staying close to shore or when they go out in the deep and
Sure. What
time of the year you're supposed to fish for things, I have no clue. Where would a person go to learn the basics of fishing?
Well, the first place I would start is if you have a computer and you have internet access, is go to the Iowa DNR website. And when you go to the Iowa DNR homepage, you can essentially find a link that is all about fishing. It'll tell you everything fishing. What's really unique about that is you can click on the various fish species throughout Iowa, and there are a whole bunch. and it will tell you about that species, where their preferred habitats are, and we even provide fishing tips and tell you when the best time of the year is to go fishing for those particular species. If that is not your cup of tea, a lot of people are not necessarily computer savvy. They can call me or any management biologist, for that matter, at our office, and I'd be happy to chat with you at length about how to go about catching whatever fish species you desire.
And do you hold clinics and that kind of thing?
We do hold clinics. Honestly, a lot of those are more aimed at children. But, you know, adults are welcome to, you know, join their kids and come to those. But we'll team up with county conservation boards a lot and bring a lot of different fish species that we've collected in our various districts and explain to people what those are, what the differences are. And then what I like to do beyond that is really, you know, our aim is to get people fishing. So we try to incorporate fishing and, you know, how to tie a knot and how to rig up, you know, your line and your pole and your tackle in order to target something like a bluegill or a crappie, and then explain where you might go in a lake or pond or river in order to find those particular fish species. So we go through the whole gamut to that, and hopefully we get people fishing a little bit better.
All right. Well, David, I hope that gives you a place to start. And there is a lot of emphasis on getting kids involved in fishing. Why do you think that's so important?
Well, you know, as we've passed over time, we've kind of determined that, you know, we're, you know, as adults, essentially our older adults pass away, and you know, we've got younger adults that are in charge now, and they're not necessarily adept on fishing.
So these skills aren't getting passed on from generation to generation.
Essentially, then, you know, that you know, dominant age class now is not passing it on to the children. And, yeah, essentially, you know, it's not getting passed on in the way that we would see. So, you know, we get those kids out there, and we also know that they, you know, in order for a kid to come to a clinic, they're going to have a parent bring them. And so, in a sense, we target the adults just the same, because it's going to be mom or dad that, you know, take those children out angling.
And
go ahead.
Before we run out of time, I want to ask you, because this entire hour I've been mentioning that you're based at Lake Darling State Park, and a lot of people know, we've done
sure.
a couple updates on the park on this show, that Lake Darling has been undergoing an extensive renovation. The whole lake was drained, and where are you now?
Well, we are really moving in a positive direction. The dam has been done for quite some time. We were waiting on some construction to be done around the shoreline, some new boat ramps and things, some sediment removal in the lake. Once all that was done, we knew that we could close the gate on the dam and start impounding water, which we did, and we are currently within inches of being at full pool
wow.
at Lake Darling.
And are there fish in the lake?
There are fish in the lake. Thus far, we've stocked bluegill, and we recently stocked channel catfish. Very soon, we'll stock largemouth bass. Red ear sunfish, and then crappies soon thereafter, and we'll have a complete fish community once again.
All right, and when do you think the whole park will be ready for people to come and enjoy?
We're hoping that kind of the main road of Lake Darling State Park that will allow you to get to a lot of the infrastructure will be open on the 1st of July. That's kind of what we're aiming for, but I'll just put a caveat on that in the sense that construction work is a bugger. You never know, so we're going to try to hold tight to that, but it could change.
All right. Well, congratulations. That must be very exciting to everybody involved.
It's very exciting. It's consumed our life since November of 2008 is when we drew that lake down.
Wow.
So we're excited to see it back again.
And this is free fishing weekend, right?
It's free fishing weekend. Residents can fish without a license. Give it a try. Again, trying to get people excited about fishing, get those adults now to pass that on to their kids and keep fishing a part of human life.
All right. Well, Chad Dolan, thank you so much.
You bet. I'm glad to be here.
Chad Dolan is DNR Fisheries Management Biologist based at Lake Darling State Park. We've been talking about fishing all hour. This is Talk of Iowa, and now we're going to look ahead to River to River coming up at noon. Ben Kiefer's with me. What's coming up on the show today, Ben?
Hi, Charity. Today we're exploring controversies involving that phrase, the separation of church and state. News that's happening here in Iowa, for instance, the building of a Christian theme park, in Sioux City with state money, but also national news. So we want to explore that with Dennis Goldford, Bob Cargill, Chuck Hurley, and a few others.
All right, coming up at noon on River to River, this is Talk of Iowa.
Get about all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones. They're mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade, sitting in the shade. Whether it's hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot